Welcome to Your Holistic Health on WRRS Radio Reading Services in Cincinnati. I'm Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum, Holistic Clinical Pharmacist of RX Integrative Solutions, and your host for today's program. We're so glad that you could join us. Your Holistic Health brings you the latest in practical health information and health tips that help you stay safe, give you support, and bring you a message of hope. Today's guest is Liz Tassone, Spiritual Director and Mindfulness Meditation Teacher, who will talk with us about spiritual growth during times of stress. In the news, does taking a daily multiple vitamin gummy actually make a difference in our health? There's a controversy. In general, eating a balanced diet is more of an insurance policy for health than taking any multiple vitamins. But some people might need to take them, like those with eating disorders, Crohn's disease, or those who are undergoing cancer treatment, according to Ginger Houlton, registered dietitian and spokesperson for the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Vegans may need to take more vitamin B12. It's important to remember that not only can we overdo fat-soluble vitamin intake, and that would be A, D, K, and E, but also water-soluble vitamins like vitamin C, the B vitamins, and others. Be sure to carefully read labels for the recommended daily allowance. In general, multiple vitamin gummies contain fewer overall vitamins and minerals than their tablet counterparts. ConsumerLab.com reports that some gummies don't contain the amount of vitamins and minerals specified on their labels. Gummies are difficult to manufacture with precision and degrade more easily than tablets or capsules. Manufacturers of lower quality gummies may even spray vitamins onto the gummy surfaces. Yikes! Gummies have added sugar and food coloring. On the other hand, if you have trouble swallowing tablets, a capsule, a liquid, and gummies offer other options for multiple vitamins to discuss with your primary care physician. Look for third-party seals like USP or ConsumerLab.com on the gummy labels to ensure that you purchase a high-quality product. Remember that some vitamins might actually interact with your medications, so you need to talk to your dietitian or your pharmacist or your physician about what products are right for your health needs. More news. Summertime is a great time to shop at your favorite local farmer's market. According to Hannah at Edible Ohio Valley, we continue to be blessed with locally grown produce through the COVID pandemic. There are many markets in the greater Cincinnati, northern Kentucky area, all 7 days a week. It's fun to talk with the farmers and small business owners about their products. You can learn about the importance of purchasing organic as your budget allows. Ask about the SNAP program, that is, the Ohio Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. It is designed to raise nutritional levels, to expand buying power, and to safeguard the health and well-being of individuals in low-income households. Many of the local markets support SNAP and produce perks. Ask about them the next time you go. And our last news item today, here's a question for you. Have you ever heard about fractals? Huh? Well, a fractal is a pattern that the laws of nature repeat over and over, but may not be exactly alike every time. Examples are everywhere and include clouds, icicles, mountain ranges, trees, that's my favorite, and ferns, just to name a few. The brain loves fractals and subconsciously seeks them out for positive vibes and healing. The next time you are outside, count the number of fractals that you can identify in nature and enjoy the healing moment. The Cincinnati Nature Center in Milford is one great place to explore them. Now turning to our health tips for this week. We have a few related to reducing brain fog coming to us from the May 11th edition of Health and Wellness. Many of us struggle with clear thoughts from time to time. Brain fog has been noted as one of the debilitating symptoms in long COVID sufferers, but may also be the result of unhealthy lifestyle choices in well individuals. What's our health tip for the day on how to overcome brain fog? Reintroduce more daily routines. Our brain relies on patterns and routine. Get enough deep REM sleep each night to help your brain lock in memories. Eat meals at the same times each day. Set aside dedicated time for exercise. Go on daily walks. Keep moving. Exercise releases a protein called, wait for it, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF, that acts like a fertilizer and makes it easier for brain cells and neuronal connections to grow. Our last health tip is related to turmeric. Turmeric is a bright orange spice that gives curry that's used for cooking a distinctive color and flavor. It's also available as a tea or a dietary supplement. The main active in turmeric is curcumin, which is thought to act as an anti-inflammatory and powerful antioxidant. Turmeric has been studied in research, and the average Indian diet provides around 2,000 milligrams of turmeric per day. The WHO, or the World Health Organization, recommends an acceptable daily intake of 1.4 milligrams per pound of body weight. So that's turmeric, 1.4 milligrams per pound of body weight. Combining turmeric with black pepper, ginger, coconut milk, or other fats enhances its absorption. Turmeric may be irritating to the stomach and not necessarily safe for people with a stomach ulcer or reflux or heartburn. Turmeric supplements may interact with other medications to mildly increase the risk of bruising and bleeding. So it's important to talk to your physician before you start taking turmeric as a supplement. The health tip, try cooking with turmeric. And again, first talk with your doctor or your pharmacist to see if the supplement turmeric is right for your individual health needs. Visit clinicaltrials.gov for more information about turmeric research. Now it's time to introduce our guest. Liz Tassone is a spiritual director and mindfulness meditation teacher. She is a part of Christ Church Cathedral's Center for Spirituality. Liz has a degree in gerontology from Miami University. She has worked for various agencies in Cincinnati, including the Council on Aging and Maple Knoll Village. For 8 years, she hosted the Family Caregiver Hour on WMKV. Welcome, Liz, to Your Holistic Health.
Thank you, Dr. Kathy. It's good to be with you again.
Well, right out of the gate, we're going to have to ask you that important question. What is a spiritual director, and why did you get started in that field?
It's a great question, and I have found that a lot of people don't know what a spiritual director is, and I have to be honest that I didn't either for most of my life, and it was when I was doing the radio show that I came upon a woman who I was going to be interviewing, and she came to the studio a little bit early, so we had like an hour to just sit in the studio before we were on the air. And she was a cloistered nun for 17 years, and I wondered what someone would be qualified for if they were a cloistered nun for 17 years. And I said, well, what do you do now? And she said, well, I'm a spiritual director. And I didn't have any comprehension of what a spiritual director is. And I said, well, what is that? She said, It's walking with another person on their spiritual journey and their journey to know God. And I immediately was struck by that and thought, I want to do that. Now, I knew that I couldn't be a cloistered nun for 17 years. I'm married with four children, so that wasn't an option. But I went, and in talking with a friend, she recommended a spiritual director that I've been with for over 15 years now. And in part of my time with my spiritual director, I was discerning, was this my call? And when I decided it was, and we found a program that was nearby in Louisville, so it was a three-year program. So really, we're trained as a spiritual director in the program I was trained in to sit with people of any faith denomination to help them to identify their truth. So a lot of what I do is just asking questions that help them to deepen in themselves, rather than me giving advice or telling them what to believe. It's none of that. I'm what's considered an interfaith contemplative spiritual director, and I help people to, I walk with them and let them, you know, sometimes people just want to say something out loud. So part of my job is just being a compassionate listener to their story. So that, I hope that's helpful. It's usually an hour that I sit with someone. I've learned to do it by Zoom because COVID restrictions. So now I primarily work on Zoom with my clients. And we sit for an hour, and we begin with a prayer, and then we open it up to whatever it is they want to talk about.
I love that. It's very patient-centered, and I love the fact that you're interfaith and contemplative. There aren't too many of you around, my dear. So you've also got mindfulness meditation training, and I think our listeners would love to hear more about that.
Yeah, in January, I completed a two-year program in training to be a mindfulness meditation teacher. And I had been teaching mindfulness as a volunteer for a few years because I really appreciated the practice. So mindfulness is really, like, it sounds really simple, but I have found that it's that you almost have to be intentional with it. So mindfulness is just being in the present moment on purpose and without judgment. So it's just like being with what is happening now. And you can do that by being with your physical body, noticing the physical sensations, noticing what you see, noticing what you taste, noticing what you hear. So there's this kind of mindfulness can include physical. Mindfulness can also be awareness of your thoughts. You know, sometimes we get in a looping pattern with our thoughts, but just paying attention to that. And then the third way we might be mindful is of our emotions. And so all of those things are meant to kind of bring us present to our own lives, because I think a lot of times we're living in the past or living in the future, and this mindfulness really brings us into our lives as they're happening. And so it really brings a lot of, what I found is an increase in joy because there's a lot to celebrate in really even just taking a walk or driving a car or just listening to music, listening to your voice, Dr. Kathy. It's very soothing and helpful. So if I'm present to that, it brings to me a lot of contentment.
So, well, and I think joy really enhances spiritual health. Would you agree?
Yes, because it's real. When you're present with what's going on in your life as it is, you know, you're really in touch with what's really going on, and it just feels like your life is in presence can be very joyful.
Well, you know, when we talk about mind-body-spirit healing, we often just gloss over spiritual health. And I'm thinking that people who have a regular spiritual regimen, like you and others, are typically happier in life. Do you agree with that?
I do. I think that's true. And I think there's actually some research that would identify that. One of the apps I have on my phone is called 10% Happier. And I think it's from a regular meditation and mindfulness practice that there's research now saying, you know, you actually are happier when you're connected. And I think it's because our spiritual practices and help us to see the larger picture of life, and we also feel deeply connected to others in our spiritual practice, that we don't feel so alone when we have a bigger connection to spirit.
Well, and along that same line, do you have any spiritual tips for our listeners that might be interested in developing a better approach to managing their stress, since that's the theme of our talk today?
Yeah, I think one of the things I've noticed is the mindfulness practice, you know, the thing that we're doing, we're in the present moment as we practice it. And it can be, and often is, something very simple. So my day begins by making a cup of coffee, and then I sit with my coffee. I'm feeling the warmth of the cup. I raise the cup to my nose and I smell it. When I taste it, I really taste the depth of it. So it seems to, when we do something that simple, rather than, you know, plan my day or look at my email, I'm just entering my sensory world in that moment. And it seems to just help my day. Now, I also add some silent practices of meditation daily. But what I found is, you know, there's no real magic in those moments spent in being present. However, I find that in the later parts of my day, when I need to draw upon patience or perseverance, that is more readily available to me. And I think that's what the research has shown as well, that cultivating mindfulness, cultivating silence and prayer gives us a reserve almost so that we can make thoughtful choices later in our day.
Well, you know, there's a nursing theory of human caring that I'd like to explore with you a little bit. And now think about healthcare professionals for a moment, mm-hmm. and how many of them might be interested in adding, let's just say, a spiritual component in their health assessment or in their practice, but they just don't know where to start. And again, because so many patients are coming in now with stresses related to just life, but in addition to COVID. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, this is interesting because many of us have this affiliation, right, with a religious organization or a belief system. And so I think, rightfully so, our healthcare providers have been, you know, kind of tiptoeing around that part of it because they don't want to impose. And no one wants to be imposed upon in the healthcare setting. So wouldn't it be nice if part of our health assessment just included the question about prayer or about the spiritual life, so that do you want to talk about that or whatever, so that there is an open invitation should someone want to talk about that. When I was diagnosed 20 years ago with bone cancer, I was by myself. When the doctor left the office, the nurse came in and knowing my diagnosis said, "Would you like me to pray with you?" And I'm a prayerful person, and so she prayed out loud. I just was silent praying, But I found it to be deeply comforting. You know, I don't know if that were encouraged in that way. However, she didn't say, I'm going to pray with you. She asked the question, and I said yes, and it was a very comforting thing. So I think there is a space that, and I don't know what the, you know, what the, you would have to see what the company policy is regarding that. But regardless whether I said yes or no, that person could have prayed for me in her silence or in her home. You know, so I think that she has the ability to, if prayer is important to her, to honor herself in that moment, whether I said yes or no. But I don't know if that's even brought up in a healthcare setting, to be quite honest. I did some chaplain work for a few years. And, you know, so when a chaplain walks in, there's just this assumption of that because you're identifying that. And people, some people just say not interested, and some people, you know, are very open and want to talk. So, you know, there's kind of this identity as chaplain as being okay to bring those things up. But I think all of us, in some ways, are bringing our spiritual life into, you know, a patient's room because we may be praying for that person interiorly as we deal with them.
And I think, Liz, those prayers are felt. I would love to share with our listeners that 20 years ago, because I have a private practice, I did choose to add an intake question that asks about spiritual health in a very generic sense and do offer to pray with or pray for on behalf of my clients at the end of a health and wellness consultation. It's a very precious moment. It's intimate. It requires trust and time and a good listening ear. But there are also other opportunities, as you've alluded to, for intercessory prayer after the moment. Mm-hmm. Long ago, we researched that in cardiovascular surgery with some different results, I might add. But there's an 11-year-old gal in Madeira right now, and this is not HIPAA violation because it's all over the internet. The community is praying for her. Her name is Ella. Our listeners might have heard about this. She's got osteosarcoma, and she's in treatment now, and there are gold signs posted in many, many yards in Madeira. The community is actually praying for Ella. There's a prayer chain. Liz, do you believe in intercessory prayer, and do you use it?
Oh, absolutely. And I was struck by the diagnosis of osteosarcoma because that is the type of cancer I had 20 years ago was an osteosarcoma. So absolutely. And I actually felt like when I was sick with cancer and really down for the count, you know, sometimes when you're feeling really bad, you don't have the strength to pray. And that's where I found myself, without the strength to pray. But I asked everybody I saw to pray for me because I believed in prayer and I knew I needed prayer, but I just didn't have the strength. And I had a priest visit at the time and I told him that. I said, I don't pray, Father. I don't have the strength for prayer. And he said something that I guess is in the Bible, which he says, when you do not pray, the Holy Spirit prays through you. And so that was a real comfort to me. And I found that there was a time when I had no more strength, literally, to even get out of bed. And yet, I got out of bed. And I thought, how did I do that? I had nothing left. And then I had a sense that maybe all those prayers that were directed my way were giving me that strength because I knew I no longer had strength. So I do believe in prayer, and I do pray, and I don't understand how prayer works. I just think it works. So I love intercessory prayer, and I feel like you know, as a human being, I feel the need to honor others' suffering. And so when I sometimes light a candle for someone else in my own home, or I write a name and slip it in a prayer box as a way to honor someone else's struggles and know, you know, kind of put that up to the divine source. So that's how I operate with intercessory, and I feel like I've been the recipient, so I guess I really feel strongly about praying for others as a result.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And you know, Liz, we could talk to you all day, but unfortunately we're out of time, and so I'm going to thank you so much for this special time with you.
Oh, my pleasure, Kathy. Thank you for asking.
You bet. We're going to close with a nice reading, and it is about peace from two of our presidents, former presidents. The first one from J.F. Kennedy. Peace is a daily, a weekly, a monthly process, gradually changing opinions, slowly eroding old barriers, quietly building new structures. That one, again, is for John F. Kennedy. The next is from Lyndon B. Johnson. Peace is a journey of 1,000 miles, and it must be taken one step at a time. Pretty wise individuals. Well, it's that time to wrap up our show. This is Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum, holistic clinical pharmacist. Visit us on rxintegrativesolutions.com. Blessings for whole person health, healing, and peace.